This is Destiny Pittman at the Sheraton in Chapel Hill with Jimmy Barnes for an interview on the 8th of October, 2015. So, let's start with your childhood. You said you were from Greenville, North Carolina. How would you describe the area you were from?
At the time I grew up, it was a tobacco-producing town, very conservative, eastern North Carolina. Politics very conservative and strongly, of course, Republican, and extremely segregated. I grew up in segregated North Carolina high school, and I graduated from CM Epps High, 1964. I was a class president of a class of 120 people. It was highly segregated at the time. We were not able to go to white institutions or restaurants and everything. If we went to the same restaurant, it was always at the back door or something like that, different places. So it was highly segregated environment. My dad worked for did a lot of maintenance work for white establishments. And worked for the mayor of the town, actually, also on a maintenance and janitorial basis. My dad also worked at Sears, a place called Sears Roebuck, they moved him to a sales type position to attract other, you know, black customers and all, but mostly did a lot of, his second job was a lot of maintenance work, you know, janitor, which I helped him with during my time, the off-school part-time work.
Did you work with him during your school years?
Yes, in the mornings before I went to school, and then the afternoons after I got out of school, you know, during a couple of years I played football, so but after football practice I go help my dad. He worked about three jobs. He would wait parties. He would clean offices in the morning before he went to his regular job at Sears, and wait tables and parties after 5 o'clock. And I would help him then sometimes also as he cleaned houses and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Was this during high school?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What high school did you go to?
CM Epps High School.
What were your experiences like at that high school?
Very good. I had teachers that were very much interested in me and my development, and a counselor that was very proactive as far as helping me to read certain things and important materials to keep up with the ways of the world and the things that happened there, and teachers that were very interested in the development. We had civics, those type of things. Very informed teachers that had gone to places, graduated from places like NC Central and A&T and Bennett and those schools, but they were educators that were very responsible for the students, their students and their development, you know, but wanted them to take it a step farther because integration was just taking place. Those laws had just been passed. They were very new. New laws, and they were trying to move students out of the segregated environment to an integrated environment. And they would pick and select students that they thought could succeed. I was not the top student in my class. I was in the top 10, but I was one of the more versatile, according to their understanding. Sort of rounded where I could probably handle some of the things and barriers that we would face in a place like this, a place like UNC.
Mm-hmm. So your school was all black?
All black, segregated, all black. Yes.
Did y'all have any run-ins with white students from other schools?
We used to have to use their hand-me-downs and equipment. Some of the times when we took tests, for standardized tests and had to go to certain places where you would meet some of them, those type of encounters. But they were not negative. They were not negative. Mm-hmm. We'd swap stories about our different places and all. You know, they'd find out what our place was like, and we'd find out what their place was like. And we discussed some of the resources that that were available at our various institutions. Mm-hmm. And we come to discover, of course, that the resources at their institutions were a lot different from, and of course more than what we had available to us at our institutions.
What examples would you have of the difference of resources?
Books, equipment, sports equipment, and exposure to traveling places, seeing things on a cultural basis as what an exposure, you know, to what we would be able to do or see.
Hey, sir.
What are you doing? Yes. That's my grandson. Exposure to various elements, cultural trips and all. We were never able to take some of the trips that would be available to them. But we'd hear stories about that. And certain, the books we'd have at our schools were basically books that they had read before, years before, and that were given to us then, only after them when we were behind. Secondary stuff, you know, so that's what we learned.
So during integration, there is use of busing?
Or yes.
Okay. How were your experiences with that?
Well, on the busing part, my father pretty much drove us to school back and forth. I had cousins that had to ride the buses that was not so pleasant. Mm-hmm. And because they'd get bused to a different part of town. But with me, it was quite different because my father and one of my uncles used to take turns driving us back and forth because we live far across, you know, from the school they wanted us to go to. But I never went to an integrated school in high school.
Okay.
I never did. But I had cousins that did.
So during your high school years, did you have a particular staff person that was most influential for you?
Yes, my history teacher, Mrs. Mildred Thompson, my English teacher, Dr. Edna Graves, my school counselor, who we went to A&T, Dr. Barnhill, all these three, and Mrs. Clara Myers, Olga Myers, I'm sorry, Olga, O-L-G-A Myers, very interested in having us to be informed and aware of the real life experiences that we would face coming out of the segregated environment, and wanted us to get this kind of exposure. So they would take us through, you know, real life scenarios, you know, actually play out things. Mm-hmm. What would you do if such and such happened? Mm-hmm. You know, how would you react? You know, and what you should do and what you should not do. Very hands on, in other words. And very, as a matter of fact, they would play things out with us as a point to where they would actually make sure that we would come across with the right reaction and to be successful. Mm-hmm. It took a strong interest in us being successful, and it was very good for me, you know, because I was really the first one in my family to go to college, you know, so it was very helpful to me because I wouldn't have known what to do otherwise. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know what to do.
You mentioned your father's work. What about your mother?
My mother was an entrepreneur, a beautician. She owned her own beauty parlor and was instrumental in showing me the business side of things. She never worked for a white person in her life. My father built a beauty parlor onto the house called Friendly Beauty Shop. And she did most of the hair for the teachers that taught me in school. And so community events and everything was discussed in my mother's beauty shop. And we got to know each other, all the teachers and everything. And my total family, you know, they took a vested interest in the Barnes kids and everything, and to make sure they would do things to be successful. My mom was very instrumental in the strong business practices and you know, management style of stuff, which I, of course, was never strong, but, you know, very, very instrumental in that.
So, what were your parents' education levels? Did your mom go to
a... My mom graduated from DeShazer's Beauty College here in Durham.
Okay.
Had gone there. But my dad had a GED, and that was it, pretty much. But he was very, very sharp, wisdom-wise. He was very, very sharp. And he just had good common sense, strong common sense that just made him very skilled in analyzing, you know, situations and common sense education. You know, he just knew, and he learned a lot from the people he worked for. He worked for the mayor of the town, you know, on a janitorial basis, his house, his lawyer's office and everything, and he taught him a lot of stuff. And so my dad would teach me some of the same things, those skills.
Do you remember your elementary school?
Yes, I do, called Fleming Street School. We actually lived across the street from Fleming Street. And one of the teachers, Mrs. Jackson, another Mrs. Norris, and Mrs. Terry, they were all cousins of my mom. So it took a vested interest in my success, and they followed me really pretty much all of my life. It's Virginia Jones, wanting to see my grades, wanting to know if I was making good grades, how I was going about doing my homework, all throughout my life. You know, so it worked out pretty good.
And that helped you be successful?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, it did.
Having that support system?
Yes, that support system was tremendously valuable to me. And just made me, it would, you know, as far as someone really wanting to know how I made it, you know, how I did, that cared about me, I always thought about that as I moved along, and it was very important. You know, it made me feel very good.
For your elementary school, do you think that your experience was true of others, or was it just for the fact you had people there that knew you?
I don't think that the extension of that support was available to everybody. You know, it was to a lot of people, but I think the beauty parlor that my mom owned, you know, and the relationships that were there, and then throughout the church, we all went to the same church, and there was a beauty parlor there. So there was sort of like an overall family relationship that I was involved with that caused a total feeling of a village raising a child. And so as being in that, the village would be aware of what was going on with Jimmy, what was going on with Jimmy's brother and my sisters. And also it was very important to my overall development.
Your church, what church did you go to? You're Christian?
Yes, I'm a Baptist. And in Greenville growing up, there was St. Mary's Baptist Church and Sycamore Hill. And all of my instructors in the school went to those same churches and everything. So it was never a case of school or work or play for lack of a better word, being out of the presence or escaping the presence of those instructors and all. We were always part of the same circle. And so there was nowhere I could pretty much hide my inactivity or lack of performance from that family. So it was refreshing in retrospect that they were always there for me when, you know, in that way. There was never a case where I would not have had a support system available to me. Never a case.
So, going into college education, what made you decide to go to college in the first place?
Well, I wanted to not have to work three jobs. Mm-hmm. And the high school instructors that I had and everyone were encouraging their students to go to college. They saw education as a way to move up in life and not have to be sort of like a dependent or say like a minimum wage person. Mm-hmm. Be able to help myself, my race, and to come back and give back to communities. To just better yourself. Mm-hmm. So I want it to be a little better and not have to have more stimulation. Mm-hmm. Just to be a little better.
How'd you get to UNC?
There was a guy that lived in our neighborhood by the name of Connie Barry Lovett. And he had come here two years before me, and he was a naval ROTC student. Very smart guy that had come here, and then they were in the midst of integration at that point in time. And the high schools, the various high schools, the segregated high schools, were trying to get students from their schools to help integrate some of these universities. So they would pick, singling out, you know, four or five students that they felt could be successful in those environments. So they pretty much helped influence me. And then my dad too, his boss had gone to UNC, and he really wanted his son to say, well, I'd like for you to be able to have a chance to, if you can, you know. And it just felt like if I had gone to some of the other schools, I would not have been as serious, you know, because most of my friends went to A&T and North Carolina Central and were doing well, but we were so wild in high school that my dad was afraid that you're going to do the same thing and probably flunk out, which I probably would have done, because some of my buddies did flunk out. So we went on to UNC, and Connie had persuaded me too. Said, man, this is a good place for you to come get a good education. And it's not as bad here as it is at some of the other universities where they're pretty much kind of dangerous for a black student. It felt like UNC at that time was a little bit more liberal, even though they were playing the racist stuff back then. Like, I never attended the football games back then, you know, sitting in there listening to those things and sitting there, because I went to one, and that was the rest of these. I never went to another one because I was in the midst of a whole bunch of white people that were getting up singing Dixie and all. It was all these orange-colored people. And the sun came out, the orange color. And it just wasn't any fun for me, you know, Dixie and all that. It wasn't any fun for me. Mm-hmm. So I never went to another one. I preferred to go on the Saturdays to A&T or Central and go to those football games, which I had a good time when I always went there. But I never did after that. You know, so that was the way that was. Every weekend I would go to one of the historically black universities back then, because that was my folks. But as far as during the week, the time to come study, I had to be here. That's where I was.
So you preferred UNC for educational purposes and HBCUs?
For social, for fun, yeah. Much so.
In your journey of getting to UNC, did you get any opposition from teachers or staff members?
From high school?
To apply.
No, they were encouraging. Mm-hmm. They wanted some of their students to go to these schools, because mm-hmm. that's when it was just starting. Mm-hmm. So they were really encouraging. They helped fill out the applications, mm-hmm. so that there was none that were in opposition to it. They wanted to go and to represent the school well. This kid came from F's High, you know, and could do well and to be successful. You know, they wanted other students to see that. Mm-hmm. I never got any opposition from my local high school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How was your social life here at UNC when you weren't out on the weekend?
Terrible. It was terrible. It was awful. There was no social life for us here. They had a thing here called Jubilee, and if you stayed here to do it, you were by yourself, as Walter said. It was no fun at all for a black student at that time, for me anyways. You know, so unless I went over to Central or A&T up in Greensboro, it would have been no fun at all. The events were not for me at that time, between 64 and 68, there was no such thing for me.
How many other black students were with you during that year?
The first year, 64, 65, mm-hmm. About 12 that I interacted with, mm-hmm. about 12. And we would always go somewhere else. Like he said, that we'd catch the bus or the little car over to North Carolina Central. On the weekends up to A&T up in Greensboro or Bennett, but unless we did that, we had no social life at all, none whatsoever.
Did that group decrease as the years went on? Like, did any transfer because of the social atmosphere?
There was a few that did. They left because it was just unacceptable. You know, it was just hard to, there was no let up, no release. And then the academic pressure was very strong.
How so?
You know, whereas you could be successful at a certain level in your high school, at a segregated high school, coming here, like I was, say, number 10, the top 10 of a class of 120, but coming here, there were over 2,000 some freshman students. Mm-hmm. Now just think of the difference, you know, the
competition.
Yes, it was just much different. And it was an atmosphere anyway of the law says we have to accept you, but it does not say we have to like you. Mm-hmm. And it was that atmosphere, you know, and it was a lot of pressure with that, especially for a kid that never been out or had that much exposure outside of North Carolina, or either outside of Greenville for that matter. Outside of Eastern North Carolina, not a lot of exposure, so it was very difficult, mm-hmm. you know. And without tutorship support here, as that was in Greenville, it made it very difficult. And the same way for a lot of kids, all the same black kids that were with me. But we had to tighten up together as a little, like a little group, mm-hmm. and the support of each other. That's about the only way we made it through at that time.
So what were some of the other ways that y'all were excluded from the dominant culture at school?
Well, the grading system, it was so much like there was a culture where a lot of these courses, especially in pharmacy schools, mm-hmm. you could not pass a lot of the tests unless you had access to the old tests. And they had cultures within the frat system here and all where they had old quizzes and tests going 20 years back. Mm-hmm. They weren't accessible to me, you know. I got one Jewish friend, mm-hmm. guy named Irvin Plisco, I-R-V-I-N, Irvin, I-R-W-I-N, I think, P-L-I-S-C-O, Irvin Plisco, that would slip me from time to time some of the old quizzes. And without those quizzes, I would not have had access to which way the professor was actually coming, so that I would know how to answer some of the questions. But no matter how smart you were, what you knew, if you didn't know how he was coming, you couldn't pass some of those tests. Mm-hmm. And so thank God enough that sometimes Irvin would share some of those quizzes with me that they had available in the frats and all that. I mean, Phi Delta Psi and the pharmacy fraternities that I got access. And it was the same way all throughout the academic arena here in Chapel Hill at that time. Mm-hmm. The old quizzes would help you pass certain tests, and there was no other way you could do it, no matter how deeply you studied or how you would go. And then we would rely on sometimes, when we came here, some of the grad students that had access that had come before we did would do some things. Like you heard the guy Hoover, the Hoovers and all that. Mm-hmm. They had gone through and knew about some of the old tests and all that, and certain ways and certain professors and what they would do and what they would not do, some of their habits. And so we learned that, and we know how to study for them, and it sort of worked to our advantage.
Do you think coming from a working class background affected your ability as a student at UNC?
Yes.
In what ways?
Well, exposure, cultural exposure, mm-hmm. for certain things. Because you know, even the tests themselves, some of the standardized tests, sometimes your success on those tests, it depends on your cultural experiences. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't had exposure to certain things, certain terminology, certain ways of certain processes, you wouldn't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, so it affected those. It didn't affect the will to go on and do certain things, but it affected the understanding of what was being presented to you.
Okay. Could you go more into depth of some of the experiences you've had as a black student socially? Do you have any more instances of racism?
Well, unless you found a way to just the social life for a black student, mm-hmm. you had to go down into Chapel Hill or Carver. Most of the black people live in Carver. Mm-hmm. You had to build relationships with those people to have a social life. Mm-hmm. There was no such thing as a social life during that time for black students on campus, because all the social stuff was by the frat, fraternity system. And you were not going to be able to be successful in that system. Mm-hmm. You couldn't pledge in that system and be a part of it. You went to a rush or something like that. I mean, all fine, but they were not. You weren't going to be involved in that. Mm-hmm. You know, beyond that. So there was no such thing as a social life. You had to be. Like going down, like getting your hair cut and all, mm-hmm. you had to go down to Carver to get your hair cut. You had to, unless you belong to one of the black churches or something like that, got involved with the black community down that way, mm-hmm. you weren't going to have a social life, you know, and that's just the way it was. There was no such thing as a social life here, and that there were. I think there were about four or five female students, I think. And I think they mentioned you saw Karen Parker up there, but there was a lady named Joanne Peoples, who was a physician, who was on the faculty now at Duke Medical School. And Mary Emma Graham, there were less than a handful of black females that were here at the time that we were here, you know, 64 through, in the early 60s, in other words. It just was not available here on campus. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to connect with someone that was off in the city, you know, Carver or Chapman. And most of them were the workers that worked here at the university or the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Your BA, your undergraduate degree, is in what?
Pharmacy, BS in pharmacy.
Yes, in pharmacy.
Yes.
And then how were your experiences in the School of Pharmacy?
In the first 2 years, very racist. They'd sit me down on the front row in the middle of a class of 500 and would not share anything. But then the third year, faculty and council, Fred Eckel and Steve Kiola, made me projects of theirs. They were from the North themselves. They had come from Ohio, and one had come from Chicago. And were used to black students at that time, and sort of like took me under their wings. As a matter of fact, Fred Eckel and Steve Kiola, during the time my wife and I were at a conference in San Francisco, recruited me back to Carolina to work. But they made it a point of theirs to make sure I was successful, almost the same way my high school teachers had. So during the third year, I began to get into a situation with two instructors, two professors, that took a vested interest in me to be successful and to make sure I got the proper tutorship and exposure to things that would make me successful in those courses and understand.
You said you were sent down to the front row and they wouldn't share their information or their,
They have study sessions.
Okay.
You know, I was never invited or able to participate in their private study sessions or quizzes. Never able to have access to the old quizzes, you know, that sort of thing. Until I got to know the guy Irvin Plisco. We got to know each other after that. I think Fred introduced me to him actually. So it was about 2 years past where I didn't. By the way, the second year I was telling you. I had gotten discouraged. I was going to quit, you know, but my dad talked me out of it, you know, and I stuck it out. And then things began to get a lot better during the third year. And as they took the opportunity to introduce me to other students, like the Jewish person, Plisco. And a vested interest in saying, hey, this is what you need to do. Sort of the same counselship and the same support that I had received in high school. Mm-hmm. And it worked out great for me. Worked out great. And I began to feel like I belong. But it's only after during the third year going on. It was a 5-year program at that time.
Okay.
You know, it was a 3-5. So it worked out pretty good. But those first 2 years were pretty tough. Yeah, very tough. You know, I had my bags packed, ready to go.
As a child, did you envision yourself as a pharmacist? What did you want to be?
Well, I really wanted to be a school teacher, you know, because that's all I knew. The only in my community growing up, the successful people were school teachers, morticians. There was one black lawyer, was one black dentist, and the rest of them were school teachers. That's all I knew. And when I was getting ready to quit, my dad said, "You don't get your college education, then you're gonna be a janitor, somebody working the barbershop." But the successful people that one everybody looked up to were the preacher, the minister, mm-hmm. The guy at the barbershop, the barbershop owner, you know, or the school teachers, or there was one black lawyer and one black dentist. And that's all that what we had. So that's all I knew. Now, the white people that we worked for, they were everything, you know. Judges, lawyers, doctors, dentists, and all of them seemed to have money, lived in nice houses. So I wanted one of them too.
So what was your first job after graduating from UNC?
Before you could take the board and to get your license, you had to get a year's experience as an intern. Mm-hmm. And not a single white drugstore would hire me as an intern, not even for free. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't even let me work for free. And you couldn't take the board if you didn't have 12 months of experience as an intern. Mm-hmm. Not one would hire me. So I had to go to Greensboro and Winston-Salem to work for Sampson's Pharmacy and also Winston-Salem Model Pharmacy to work as interns before I could take my license. I worked in Greensboro under Robert Sampson and then Winston-Salem under Rufus Harrison at the Harrison's Pharmacy. I had to do that for 12 months before I could take the board of pharmacy, and I took it and passed it the first time. I felt well prepared because I had gone to school here, and I did very well. And then I worked, Sampson offered me a full-time job with him. And then when I began to get a family of, more responsibility, I moved on and worked for Revco Drugs. Then it's called CVS now. Yeah. I worked for them and moved on and worked for myself. But then I ran into a lot of competition as far as big chains were coming in like Rite Aid and Eckert's and all that. So I moved to hospital pharmacy. And I worked at Baptist Hospital for a long time. Baptist Hospital and came back down here to go to graduate school. Sorry.
It's fine.
Go to graduate school to work at Piedmont Health Services for a while as a pharmacy director. And I came back here to the School of Public Health. I have my second degree here at UNC is a master's in public health. And then I got recruited from Fred Eckel and Steve Caola to come back to hospital pharmacy at UNC Hospital, the hospital's healthcare system. And that's where I worked the rest of the time and retired from there. No regrets. Enjoy everything I've been able to experience because it's quite a variety of pharmacy. Mm-hmm. I worked all phases of pharmacy except industrial pharmacy in the industry, so I had a very good experience.
So what do you value most from your experience when being in the School of Pharmacy?
Well, the ability to adjust and adapt to whatever was facing me. And to find out what it would take to be successful and move on it. You know, adapt to adversity and be able to handle it.
Do you think that holds true for your undergrad experience at UNC?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think to tenacity, the perseverance part helped me. You know, to stick it out, stick it through, see it through, and adapt and adjust. I wouldn't trade it much of anything because I was able to meet different types of personalities and be able to move mm-hmm. and work on it, work through it.
Is there anything else you want to share that you want people to know?
I'm just happy to see the growth of minority students here, mm-hmm. From what the experiences that I would have had, because I know the exposure and resources and the weight they would have behind what they would gain here, what it means to them in their career searches. You know, I do not discount the education from a historically black institution. As a matter of fact, I encourage it, mm-hmm. but I would still like to see them experience both sides, because I know the difference that it makes, it used to make anyway, in the job search and when you, who's sitting on the other side of the desk doing the hiring, I know what a difference it makes. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what a difference it makes now, and it just makes a difference.
You said earlier about UNC being so-called liberal, but actually not being liberal in some aspects. Are there any more instances besides the football games and the Confederate flags?
Well, I was saying liberal, relative.
Okay.
Relative, because see, say like back that during that time, you had this guy. I don't know if you remember the name Jesse Helms. Mm-hmm. And Raleigh, the editor of the paper there and all, places like North Carolina State and all, they were extremely conservative back that time. And the most liberal place was UNC, was Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, they labeled it as a bunch of liberals over here. In other words, I use that to say that the people here would have been more tolerant of people my color. And that was the only, because I would have never gone to state back then. I would have never tried to go. Mm-hmm. You know, places like Clemson and all that. I mean, really very difficult places for a person of color to me, in my, from what I perceive, very dangerous. And even though calling this place liberal in comparison to other places, it was still, by other standards, a place like NYU, mm-hmm. would, you know, this was not liberal, but for North Carolina, it was.
Did you ever live outside of North Carolina?
Never lived.
Or visiting, maybe?
Yeah, I lived with my uncle for a while in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Yeah, for a while. And matter of fact, when I was ready to quit here, I was wanted to really go back there and live and try to get into my first choice of college was Howard University. You know, I wanted to go to Howard, but we couldn't afford for me to go there. We had to go to a state-supported institution. I wanted to go to Howard, Hampton, or Morehouse, you know. But I stayed with my uncle for a while up there. But coming back here, I've been in North Carolina most of my life.
Mm-hmm. When you were at UNC, did you wish you were at one of those other schools?
Yeah. During those first 3 years, most of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I wished real bad. But I knew, as the four guys that I was the tightest with in high school, all four of them flunked out. Mm-hmm. And they were smart than I was. All of them were in the top 10 in my high school class. But not one of them graduated. And I would not have graduated. The good time we were having on the weekends when I went up there, they were having that good time all during the week. Mm-hmm. And I would have been in the same group. You know, all of them were smarter than I was in math, smarter than I was in all the things. So all of them had to do other things, you know.
I've gone through all the questions I've had, so if you have any stories you want to say, you can do that.
Well, I as I said, I just think I'm glad to see the growth as far as the number of students and the resources that they have available to them. And as I look at the football teams and the basketball teams, which represents us so much now. It's, women, we're a big part of this university. Mm-hmm. And when they come to cheer and everything, I mean, we make this university now. So I'm just glad to see that. I'm proud of it. Yeah, I'm real glad. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't. Carolina cannot win without the presence of Afro-American students mm-hmm. and participants. It just ain't happening, you know. So I'm just so glad to see that. I'm very happy to see it. I mean, you here interviewing me, this would have never happened before. Mm-hmm. So I'm just grateful and thankful mm-hmm. to have seen this grow.
All right, thank you.
I had one question. You had your master's in public health. What mm-hmm. department were you?
Health Policy Administration. Health Policy Administration.
That was it for me.
All right. Well, Destiny, thank you. I'm sorry it took so long for us to get around together.
It's fine. It's really fine.
All right. Well, yeah. I wish you my success here, and I hope that you are always happy that you came here, and I'm sure you will be. And I wish you much success in your mm-hmm. career. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you made a good choice, and I think you would never regret it. In the end, in the big picture of things, I think you'll be glad you came to UNC.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
If I can ever do anything to help you, let me know. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right.